couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Kahn.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys the Movies. This week, we're going back in time.
Whoop, whoop.
That's all I have to say about that, actually.
We're sort of going back in time.
Well, we're going forward or sideways, I guess, to The Proposal with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds, which I guess is contemporary. And then
What part of it is you like, no, that took place in the 50s?
I don't know. Could have taken place in the 90s, for all I know. But they have iPhones in the movie, I think.
Yeah, they have phones and all that kind of stuff. So you lose, dude.
But then we're going back in time to the year one with Jack Black and Michael Cera and director Harold Ramis.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, go on.
No, that's it. That's the whole thing. But before we get to all that, here's how you can get a hold of us. Go over to fatguysthemovies.com. You can go to iTunes. Just search Fat Guys the Movies in the iTunes store. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or leave us a voicemail, 614-388-8735.
Here, I got a voicemail on one of the other lines we use. Somebody called and asked. They wanted me to pass a message along to the Disney people who've made Up.
Awesome. What was the message? Was it like feedback on the film, like, here's what you could have done better in your almost perfect movie, Up?
No, it wasn't even that. It was just basically, yeah, I wanted to get in touch with the people who did Up. Can you get me in touch with them? And apparently,
well, I mean, you could. You did interview Pete Docter.
Well, yeah, in a press conference kind of thing. But
hey, people don't know that, man. They think you're cool.
They do, because you know what was funny? I once got an email from this. It must have been some teenage girl, or it could have been a 40-year-old dude, for all I know. And he was like, yeah, can you get me David Krumholtz's phone number? Now, if you don't know who David Krumholtz is, he's sort of this dorky guy, and he was in, like, he played, probably the most recognizable thing that I know of. So he was in the Santa Claus movies. He played, the lead elf. Of all people, David Krumholtz. Maybe he's in, like, How I Met Your Mother. But, I mean, come on, really? Seriously? Like, I know David Krumholtz? And if I did, why would I give you his number?
Maybe you do.
I do. He's sitting right next to me.
Is he tied up in a chair next to the Asian girl?
What are you talking about?
I don't know. I'm just assuming that you have an Asian girl tied up sitting next to you.
Wow.
I make assumptions, you know, Kevin Carr. They're not always right, but they're assumptions.
Generally, people make assumptions that you do exactly what the other person does.
You know, so. I'm only making these assumptions because I've seen you do it before, okay? Yeah, no, that's right.
No, whatever. Okay, are you done giving the whole feedback thing?
Yeah, no, people should go on to iTunes and review our podcast because it's awesome.
You know what's funny? As I was reading some of the iTunes reviews, and my theory is that it's all just your friends.
Because they all say, I don't like Kevin Carr. Oh, no, I got an email. I got an email from somebody this week who said, or maybe an instant message from a fan. I'm really sorry that I don't remember their name
or
who
they were. Now they're no longer going to be a fan.
This is terrible. I can't remember a lot of things.
And they hated Kevin, but they loved me, but now they're going to like Kevin and hate me because I couldn't remember.
But he said that... initially didn't like Kevin Carr, but he is warm to them.
I am sort of like drinking coffee. It initially doesn't taste good. You know, just initially.
Is this like the pitch you gave your wife back in the day, like before she was your wife?
You don't want to know what the pitch I gave my wife.
Because
litigation pending. I don't even want to get into it.
Yes, she married you anyways. I think that's really the ultimate charm of Kevin Carr.
That is my charm. That's the whole thing. Like I said, it's like coffee. If you give coffee to a 3-year-old kid, they're going to be like, blah, blah, blah. But it becomes an acquired taste. You got to listen to me for like 6 weeks, and then you'll be like, oh, I can't get up in the morning without my dose of Kevin Carr. He's delicious.
If there's anyone out there like that, I would like to meet this person and punch them in the face. I have a weekly dose of Kevin Carr, and that's about the most I can handle.
That's right. We don't even live in the same city anymore.
I had to move thousands of miles away from you.
Thousands, maybe about 1,000. It's not thousands.
It's close.
Hundreds.
Don't argue
of miles.
Semantics with me, sir.
When you used to live ones of miles away from me. Anywho, an interesting note because of another email we got this week. I am going to be a guest on another podcast.
Oh, very cool.
This coming. I'm not sure when it goes live because, you know, I don't have any control of it. But it's for this podcast called Q on Film. So,
are they going to ask you cues on film about film?
They're going to ask me about Star Trek the Motion Picture and Star Trek the Wrath of Khan. Although they just did an episode, the latest episode is all about movies from the 80s. and like sci-fi movies from the 80s. They talked about like Tron and Highlander and Trancers with the original with Tim Thomerson as Jack Death. And I was like, I would have loved to have been on that one.
But nice.
Apparently they don't like me. They didn't like me then. Now they like me. And so, yeah, listen to Q on Film. We'll put a link on the Fat Guy site when it goes live.
Cool. Cool. Yeah, no, we'll put a link up. That'll be great.
Cool. Should we move on to the reviews? Because we only have like a couple minutes left.
No, let's talk about this first movie. I mean, I didn't see it, so I don't really, I'm not in a hurry to get to talking about this movie.
Okay.
Nor would I be had I seen it.
Yeah.
So tell us what it is, Kevin Carr.
Okay. It's The Proposal, in which Sandra Bullock plays a high-powered book editor who forces her assistant, played by Ryan Reynolds, to marry her so she isn't deported back to Canada.
Margaret, your visa application is denied. You're being deported.
Deported? It's not like I'm an immigrant or something. I'm from Canada.
If you're deported, you can't work for an American company.
If there was any way at all that we could make this thing work.
Pardon the interruption.
I understand the predicament, but there is something that you should know. We are, we're getting married.
Who is getting married?
You and I are getting married. Yes.
We are.
Getting married.
We are getting married.
Yes. Can't find a love like ours.
Now, like you said, you
silly
didn't see
Canadians.
This.
Silly Canadians. They're always thinking up these weird schemes about deportation.
Well, no, it's the Americans that are going to deport her.
How to get out of being deported. We deport people back to Canada?
Well, yeah, if you're doing it,
that's like, hey, let's take all the nice people. You know, it's like it's the same thing with deportation back to Mexico. It's like, hey, let's take all the people who cut all of our lawns and send them back. What?
Wow, I'm just gonna sit there and let you soak in that comment while you're sitting in Austin, Texas. Anywho.
What? No, that's. I mean, that's kind of true.
Okay, you're
nice
telling
people,
yourself
though. Okay, so tell me about this movie.
Do you want any more rope to hang yourself?
No.
Or are you done? Anywho, this one. Ironically, she's a Canadian, but she's not nice. But she lives in New York, so there you go. And this is a very typical, very formulaic romantic comedy. It was actually written by a studio head who then sold the script like under a pseudonym, and. It does kind of have that feel that it's written by a studio head in the sense that it hits all these formulaic points. You know, it has the crazy family. It's sort of like a revamp, a little bit of Sandra Bullock's While You Were Sleeping. So it fits as a romantic comedy. It's cute. Take your wife or girlfriend to it. You're going to like it. They're going to like it.
Ryan Reynolds is usually pretty good.
He's pretty good, although he's pretty subdued in this one. He's not like crazy or anything like that. It's kind of like what he did in Definitely Maybe last year. It's
which I liked.
That. Yeah, that's a great movie. This is never going to live as the greatest romantic comedy ever, but considering the only other stuff we've had this summer for the romantic comedy crowd is Ghosts of Girlfriends Past and My Life in Ruins, I think this one will probably do pretty well.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, and she gets nearly naked in it, too. She like just kind of covers up. She does sort of that Janet Jackson
thing. Sandra Bullock.
And she looks pretty doggone good. Although there is a jazz club sort of the Spider-Man jazz club scene in there where the movie just kind of goes completely bat poop crazy.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. So. All right, cool. Well, I mean, it's about time to go to a break. When we come back.
Well, I'm going to say kind of rocks.
Sorry. I was trying to play you off like the Oscars.
Whatever.
So you said what? Kind of rocks?
Kind of rocks.
Nice. When we come back, we're going to go all the way back to year one and see how that works out for us.
Nice segue.
And we're back. In fact, guys, the movies, we're rolling right on through. Hopefully, I don't continue to dig my own ditch any further.
Yeah, you've got people that do that for you.
Wow. Nice. I'm almost impressed with you today, Kevin Carr.
I got you on that one, and I wasn't even...
If you hear noises in the background, it's because somebody decided to run a leaf blower outside my window. Mm. Either that or Dr. Cole Abias is playing with model airplanes in the house again, which is not appropriate.
Doesn't he have a doctorate in making model
airplanes? In model airplanes? Yes, that's what his doctorate is in.
Or
in model airplaneology.
Or in leaf blowing.
Or in leaf blowing.
I can hear that leaf blower. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what's happening over here at Reject HQ. What's happening at Reject?
Care to make any
HQ,
more comments about
Ohio?
Are you care to make any more comments about ethnic groups and lawn care?
No, they're right outside.
Okay.
Anyways.
Wow.
Moving on. What are we talking about now? We're talking about year one. This is going to be great, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, not really, because it's year one. Here's the thing. Okay. Do you want to just start by introducing it and get the trailer out of the way so I can stab myself in the face?
Yes. Year one. Jack Black and Michael Cera are hunter-gatherers kicked out of their tribe who end up in the city of Sodom with Cain of Cain and Abel fame.
She doesn't even know I exist. There's like 60 people in the village. I mean, you really have to go out of your way to not know that somebody exists.
Drag her back to your hut.
What if she struggles?
Give her a little tap on the head. Women respond to that.
That's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
That sort of a knowledge you taste.
Yeah, does it have a sort of forbidden taste? Because that's what it is.
You're cursed, man.
You better get out of here.
I'm going. I'm going to start a new tribe. It's going to be 10 times better. It's going to be called Muscle Tribe of Danger and Excellence. So who's with me?
Cain. Okay, punch yourself in the face now.
No, stab myself.
You're the one who wrote that.
I did. No, I think it's funny. It sounds really weird when you read it, because I don't think you read it first before. You just like read it off the cuff, so you didn't know what you were saying.
I wasn't putting the right emphasis on the right syllables.
Wah, wah. But, I mean, I could have put there Jack Black and Michael Cera go in and tell Neil Miller that he's a complete moron, and you would read that, which would be awesome.
I'm like Ron Burgundy like that. We're both super cool.
Nice reference. Way to go. You know what's funny? I never even saw...
No, I am not aware of what's funny. Please tell me.
You aren't, obviously. I never even saw trailers for this movie before I saw it. And I've heard other people be like, yeah, the trailer... Like, I sat next to... at the screening of this, I sat next to Jason Zingali from Bullseye.com. And he's kind of like, yeah, I saw the trailers. I don't know what to think. I hadn't even seen the trailers. I had just seen pictures. I'd just seen like the poster and the internet advertisements for this, and I was dreading this movie.
Ouch.
Yeah, and you know what? I wasn't disappointed.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, because somebody actually on Twitter earlier this week, after I saw it and kind of said that I thought it felt really flat, somebody mentioned back to me that they felt that way from the trailers, and that's extremely true. Like, this movie is exactly as advertised. It's Jack Black, Michael Cera. They're the two characters that you've seen the most from them, inserted into this weird netherworld where, like, 400 years of history is all happening at the same time. You know, you have the Garden of Eden, you've got hunter-gatherers, you've got the city of Sodom, you've got there was another Cain and Abel. None of these things that were actually happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of this, like, let's wander through history deal. It's very reminiscent of History of the World Part 1, but not even in the same league.
Well, but see, History of the World Part 1, I mean, it was so purposely ridiculous in its timeline. I mean, they were going from Roman Empire to the French Revolution. I mean, they were all over the place in history, but they did that on purpose. I mean, that was just being like, oh, let's just
because
mismatch.
It was about this broad stroke of history.
Yeah.
And you know what? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, they almost didn't do it enough. They just kind of had these four or five crossovers at once, but it didn't. But it's almost like you could believe that the writers thought that cavemen and Cain and Abel and the city, the whole Sodom and Gomorrah story, all happened at the same weekend.
Yeah, that's true. It really tries to kind of piece those all like together in the same moment. And you know what? I'll give it credit for a few things.
Okay.
For Mr. Harold Ramis, who I personally adore. The man's great.
Didn't he play Adam for a long time? He played Adam in the movie too, didn't he?
Yes, and he directed and wrote the story.
Yeah, it was in focus.
One, it was in focus. Two, it commits to its own joke. Like, it doesn't try and do anything silly. Like, I mean,
what
we always complain about.
Hold on,
no.
What?
It doesn't. It doesn't try and do anything outside of the time period that it's kind of set. Like, Amy Winehouse doesn't show up.
Oh,
so it's not like Friedberg and Seltzer bad.
Okay.
So it commits. It kind of sticks to its own joke.
You don't have Iron Man walking into the scene,
right? Iron Man doesn't show up anywhere, so it's not one of those kind of movies.
Yeah, it's not a spoof.
And that's something that audiences concern themselves with. Yeah. And then, two is there are a few minor characters, performances from Bill Hader and Oliver Platt and Hank Azaria, that even though they're ridiculous, those three men make that work. Like, they make those characters work, and they steal scenes in a major way.
Yeah.
So there are some redeeming qualities here. The movie got some laughs from me. It had to work for him, but it got him.
Well, here's the thing. Stealing scenes is sort of like ripping off the dollar store. You're not... It's not that big of... It's not this classic heist. I mean, you're just sort of like shoplifting an eraser kind of thing. So it's not... Mm-hmm. You don't have to really go work hard to steal scenes. You're right. There are some funny moments. There are parts where I laughed, and I laughed hard. But it's like... It was like a 10-minute wait for that stuff to happen. It was like laugh
really
hard.
Yeah, it was
hard,
really...
And then you just have to sit through 10 minutes of like everything that ranges from mildly funny to not funny at all and embarrassing.
Well, yeah, and I think we're seeing this a lot more, and it takes a movie like The Hangover to kind of show you what it means to have a very well-strung comedy, like a comedy that works all the way through and has good energy all the way through.
Yeah.
Because a lot of comedies lately, they just feel like patched together moments.
Well, this,
you know, they feel like it's a series of moments that are funny in their own right.
Mm.
But, you know,
yeah, this one doesn't
make a funny movie.
This one just felt like it was a pitch. This totally feels like a studio piece where they're just like, oh, okay, wacky comedy in the past. Let's take Jack Black, who's been in a lot of stuff, and he's famous. Let's take Michael Cera; he's up and coming. Let's put them together. Get somebody to write a script for this quickly. Can you have it turned around by next
week? Right.
Weekend?
It feels like the pitch came first; the story came about third.
In a lot of ways, it's as if they had taken the old Saturday Night Live sketch "Lothar of the Hill People" and made a movie out of it. Like, they were doing this back in the 90s, where every single sketch on Saturday Night Live got its own movie. You had, of course, like, Wayne's World, but you also had the Coneheads. You had It's Pat. You know, they just started... They had the Ladies Man come out. Movies that should have never been given their own movie were doing it because Lorne Michaels was just producing movies. He had somebody who was funneling cocaine money or something. And it's like they took the Lothar sketch.
You need a front
was,
for that somewhere.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's laundering. The Lothar movie, would that's what it would have been. It was a okay sketch, but it really didn't have anywhere to go. But it also felt, this movie felt like a Saturday Night Live sketch where we've all seen those sketches where they just, it's an okay sketch or it's not even that funny at all, but they don't know how to end it. And so it's just sort of like they give a line and then they turn on the applause sign and zoom and pull back. And it just sort of, blah, and it just ends. Every scene is like that. There's like no real punchlines. They just sort of, and it seems like they edited stuff out, and it really was this completely haphazard stumble, like a drunken goat trying to get its way through this movie. And it's just like the director and all the, and like Ramis and all his crew is just like, just go with us on this. Don't question it. Cause trust me, this is funny, even though it's not.
Right.
And Jack Blatt flipping scats in the movie. Can we have a movie that he doesn't
scat driving
in?
Home. We were driving home, and that's one thing Dr. Abaya said to me was, you know, he's like, can Jack Black just make a movie where he doesn't have to, like, scat? It's just unnecessary.
The only movie that I know of that he didn't do that, you know, since he's really kind of become known. I mean, something like, what was it, that wedding movie with Nicole Kidman?
Margot at the Wedding.
Margot at the Wedding. He'd obviously, Matt, he didn't. But Tropic Thunder, he didn't. I give him respect that he didn't actually scat during that movie.
That's true.
That
would have ruined that movie, I think.
He could do a Steven Spielberg Holocaust movie, and he'd still walk in going, you're going to get in the ovens. I mean, that's what his, that would be, he'd make a scatting, singing joke about the Holocaust. That's what Jack Black would do.
Likely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going Totally Sucks on year one because I got to give a Totally Sucks to something, and this one seems ripe for it. Even though it made me laugh, the movie overall is just not worth seeing.
You know, I agree with you. Totally Sucks.
Awesome. We got a Totally Sucks marathon going on today.
I didn't say that the proposal's a kind of rocks.
Oh, fair enough. Well, if you need to take your honey out, don't take her to see year one.
Okay.
All right. When we come back, it is time to talk about the box office and argue about other stuff.
Bye.
Yes.
miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
Hello and welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies.
What was
that? That was a terrible... I have no idea. That was awful.
What are you smoking over there, Kevin Carr?
Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't smoke, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I only take intravenous drugs. Anyways,
Nice.
I guess what we're going to do now is the box office.
Yeah, I would hope so. I think that's pretty much next on the list.
Yep, the box office. I am out of it today, man.
I've noticed. You're killing me, Smalls.
I'm killing you. I will kill you.
Why would you do that?
Murder
you. That's not,
I don't know.
That's not cool to me.
Be funny, though.
I don't think anybody else would be laughing. My special lady friend wouldn't be laughing if you killed me.
If it was really funny, she probably would.
Mm.
She'd be upset. She'd be like, oh. But she's like, that is pretty funny that you had a goat eat him.
She does have a pretty wicked sense of humor.
She is. She's a sharp cookie, I'll tell you that. Well, I take that back. She's dating you. Can't be all that sharp. There we go.
I hate you. Officially hate you.
So let's talk about box office.
I don't even want to talk to you about box office now. That was mean.
It was funny, see?
It was stupid.
You have no sense of humor.
Whatever.
You have no sense of humor whatsoever.
Whatever.
No sense of humor. No sense of humor. No sense of humor.
Anyways, looking back to last week's box office...
Yes.
We had The Hangover coming in first again.
Oh, now you want to talk box office.
No, I do.
Okay.
The Hangover.
The Hangover won again?
Won again. Woo-hoo. With $32 million. Up came in second with $30 million. Taking a Pelham 1-2-3 at $23 million. Imagine that. $5.5 million.
Yep.
I bet you're feeling good about that.
Oh, absolutely.
You're single-handedly destroying Eddie Murphy's career. You know that, right?
I'm single-handedly. Do you know that I demanded an apology from Eddie? I mean, all this apology garbage that's going on about, you know, well, we know the whole raping with David Letterman.
Oh, the Sarah Palin jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I didn't want to talk about those.
No,
offend
me. That's cool. They offend you?
Sarah Palin offends me.
The jokes offend you?
No,
or
her. Just her in general.
The her?
Me.
I heard somebody, and actually, I think I read this on, I have to admit, I'll tell you where I read it. I read it on Nikki Finke's blog, and she was talking about the people who were protesting David. Because what's funny, he apologized, yet people still protest. This is why,
right.
If you screw something up, like Neil, you should never apologize to the Mexican people for insinuating that they're all gardeners. just stick to your guns. Do not apologize, because even if you do apologize, you're still going to have people protesting and calling for me to fire you.
How can you fire me, though? That's not
even
possible.
From the show. Well, I know, but even whether it's possible or not, CBS isn't going to fire David. And then this is what's so ridiculous. The quote from Nikki Finke is apparently
Nikki
there
Fink.
Was a...
Her name's Nikki Fink. Finkel and Einhorn. Finkel and Einhorn. That's all I can think of when you say that.
Okay. Anywho, Nikki Fink. She referenced this... one of the protesters has said that, quote... and I'm going to paraphrase, but the quote was something like that David Letterman raped her with his mouth, which I'm like, that's really brings up a bad imagery
that's much worse than what David Letterman actually said.
That's nowhere near accurate. And but see, he pisses me off too, because the thing is, he was making the joke about the one who was with her. It was inappropriate and stupid, but it's David Letterman, for crying out loud. And then he's like, oh, no, I was making the joke about the other daughter who wasn't in that the baseball game. It's just like everybody grow a pair.
Just
and
cop to your joke, man.
Deal with it, yeah. And then this is the other funny thing. They lost a sponsor. The Late Show lost a sponsor. It was like Embassy Suites or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who owns Embassy? Because they're like, oh, well, we have the standard of...
Mm-hmm.
Respect. So it's Embassy Suites. You know who owns the hotel chain? I think it was Embassy Suites.
Who?
The Hilton Corporation. Who named Hilton is the most famous for f***ing on camera? Don't worry, I'll bleep that out. Who is
the
most famous?
Wow, Kevin Carr, you are out there this week, man. I'm just going to let you go.
It's all ridiculous to sit there and have the Hilton Corporation basically pull it for some... mildly funny. The joke was like, eh?
Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't
in
a great
defense
joke.
Of Paris Hilton, she was well over 18 by the time she was doing
yeah,
whatever it is
what?
You just bleeped out on camera.
No one raped anybody in this, and people are acting like he did. And here's the thing. So the point is...
What are we even talking
it's
about
wrong.
Here?
So the point is everyone's saying, oh, it's wrong to make jokes about rape and because she was 14. Okay, then everybody who's ever made a joke on the air about Michael Jackson molesting little boys, you need to apologize. Because I don't see the difference between making jokes about Michael Jackson raping boys and A-Rod presumably having consensual sex with Sarah Palin's 14-year-old daughter. So there.
So there, yeah. People.
Yes. And then imagine that came in number 6.
So what's going to happen this week? Where's year one and the proposal going? I think the proposal is going to do better than year one. So I think year one's advertising is even, I mean, it's even that's bad. Like, God.
I think you'll be lucky to get year one in the top 5. Honestly, okay. I think it's going to do imagine that numbers, and I think the proposal has a shot at winning simply because there's really nothing out there like it. If you look at the top 12, mm-hmm. You've got My Life in Ruins at number 11. So nobody even cares about that movie. The last romantic comedy you had was Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, which did okay, opened with Wolverine. So it's there's really nothing out there for the date crowd. There's nothing out there for the date crowd unless mm-hmm. you want to, you know, like drag me to hell. Okay.
Right.
But that could be for the date crowd. But The Hangover has been on the top for 2 weeks. It was at 32 million.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think year one's going to cut into it. Like, I believe that the audiences are similar. So
yeah,
that's
right.
Why The Hangover probably won't win this weekend. But, you know, I think...
But even if it only suffers like a 30% drop, it's still going to be like in the low 20s,
right.
19, 20 million anyways.
I have a feeling, though, that this is going to be a very light weekend in Hollywood. It's going to be spread out. You're going to have a lot of like $10 million films.
Yeah, but I think even if The Hangover or even if The Proposal manages like 25 million, mm-hmm. which is completely doable, it's going to win the weekend.
Yeah.
Did you get the ketchup and mustard set from Imagine That?
No.
I got a box set of pancake mix, ketchup, mustard, and hot sauce from Imagine That, like
awesome.
Like the Monday after it opened. So it's like I couldn't even...
Why didn't I get a ketchup and mustard and pancake mix set for the movie Imagine That?
It was weird.
Kevin Carr, you get all the good swag.
I think that Sarah Palin's daughter sent it to me.
Oh, that's funny.
I don't even know what that means.
Hardy har har har.
All right, should we move on to a Fat Guy 5?
Yeah, let's do the Fat Guy 5. I think it's a good time
for
that.
Fat Guy 5. The Fat Guy 5. This is in honor of Neil Miller. These are the 5 daughters under 18. Now, the 5 daughters under 18 that you want to knock up.
You need to bleep that out, that whole thing. That's just, anyway. I'm just not offended at all. Whatever. Anyways, this week's Fat Guy 5 is all about historical comedy.
Yes.
Movies.
Arguably... Year one is a historical comedy. You can make
well. I mean, it makes it makes fun of historical events. Like
it attempts to be,
or events that were, I don't. Whatever, a caveman. Okay. It's about cavemen. Okay?
Whatever. Stuff. Okay. Whatever.
Anyway, so historical comedies because year one at least is kind of trying. You go ahead. You got number 5. Number 5 is
I
orders.
Got number 5. Okay. I'm going to put this, even though this is not my favorite, I'm not a big fan of this, but I know a lot of people are. You can't really talk about a historical comedy without MASH. MASH is sort of this groundbreaking film that then became this even more popular TV show. So there is a joke running around that Donald Sutherland once ran into Alan Alda and he came up and said, "Hey, I'd like to thank you for my career."
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So MASH is one because, you know, it was made after the Korean War, mm-hmm. about the Korean War.
Fair enough.
Unlike something like Dr. Strangelove, which actually took place totally in its time.
Yeah, I was kind of lobbying for Dr. Strangelove, but that's fine.
Because you were like
I mean,
born
it's about
in
a
like
historical event, so...
It's because you were born in like 1992, and you don't realize that movies that are in black and white weren't made just now.
Fair enough.
Okay.
They make movies in black and white now. I saw The Good Shepherd. No, not The Good
the
Shepherd.
The Man Who Wasn't There.
What was that George
the good
Clooney
German.
Movie?
The good German.
German.
The other George
Shepherds,
Clooney movie would
Germans,
be...
Germans, they're all the same.
Good Night and Good Luck. That was another black and white George Clooney movie.
Yes, yes. Speaking of things that are good, Good Morning Vietnam is number four on our list. Thought I'd throw that in there. Wow, Robin Williams plays a DJ in Vietnam. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome movie.
Yes, he does.
Not as much. I mean, it's probably the of Robin Williams' comedies, it's the least like comedy. Like, it, but it's very funny, but it also has some good dramatic beats to it.
It was one of his earlier forays into drama, actually. Back when you were like four. Anyways, next is Matinee, which if you don't, and a lot of people don't remember this movie. It didn't do very well. I absolutely loved it. It's told in the backdrop of the Cuban Missile Crisis, mm-hmm. and it's basically a fictionalized account of William Castle, who used to do the gimmick movies. You know, he did like The Tingler and House on Haunted Hill and mm-hmm. and those sort of things where he'd have like, you know, he'd have like animals, you know, like the fake Tingler coming around and seats electrified and that sort of thing. And it stars John Goodman as the William Castle character, yeah. and it's just a fun little movie and didn't do very well. Came out in the early 90s. A fantastic movie, very funny, directed by Joe Dante. Check it out if you haven't seen it.
Nice. All right, and number two is a three-pack. It is three Monty Python films because I'm a lover of the Python.
You're like
Monty
a three
Python,
pack Shakur.
Not any Python.
I love that.
Kevin, you missed that one. I set you up perfectly.
The Burmese Python, or are you talking about a trouser snake?
Oh, wow. Anyways, we have Monty Python's The Meaning of Life, Monty Python's The Life of Brian, and
The Holy Grail.
The Holy Grail. Sorry. I almost forgot The Holy Grail. That's like the best one of the three.
It's the Holy Grail of movies, man.
But we were observing the other day that most, pretty much all of Monty Python's movies are...
At some point.
Were historically referenced.
Although I will say on Reject Radio, Cole Abias made the
Dr.
assertion.
Dr. Cole Abias.
Dr. Abias did make the assertion that Jabberwocky is a Monty Python movie, and it's not. It's just involves the Pythons.
Oh,
sort of
I
like
see.
Yellowbeard. Yellowbeard was not a Python movie, although it starred like Graham Chapman and Eric Idle and that
okay.
kind of thing.
I'll pass that along.
So they go.
He's still over there toiling with his model planes. So.
It's not Monty Python's Jabberwocky. So there you go.
Gotcha.
The last one in the last like 45 seconds
the
here,
best
we've
one.
Got the best one, the most irreverent, best historical comedy, History of the World Part One by Mel Brooks. Very, very funny, groundbreaking, crass, hilarious, and not enough boobs, but there you go.
Nice.
Yeah. That's all I have to say. And you wanted to talk about Blazing Saddles, but
I would put Blazing Saddles in there. Of course, it's more of a parody of Westerns. In general, mm-hmm. but it to me it's one of the greater historical comedies of all time. I would put mm-hmm. it on my own list if I were, say, making a list.
Help me!
Shut up! Wow!
I'm just quoting Blazing Saddles for you.
Anyways, it's time to go to break. When we come back, we're gonna wrap you up and send you out of here. And we're wrapping you up here on Fat Guys at the Movies. Now that we've gotten Kevin's rant about Sarah Palin out of the way, and now that we've gotten the movie reviews out of the way.
For the folks of you on the conservative station in Wyoming, you can go to Fat Guys at the Movies and listen to that rant, or not. So there.
Yes.
Let's move on.
Okay. Yeah, no, I lost track for a second.
The world famous. World famous. Come on.
Oh, we're moving on to the world famous DVD Roundup.
There we go.
What can I say? I always come back to the DVD Roundup. And I'm going first again this week because I just like to get mine out of the way, and then I get to take a break because then Kevin goes through his list of like 35 DVDs. So mine is a simple Dr. Strangelove on Blu-ray. Awesome movie. We mentioned it in the historical comedies as I was trying to fight to get it into the Fat Guy 5 this week.
Even though it's not comedy.
Even though it's not a historical comedy, it's about a historical event, essentially the Cold War.
Okay, yeah.
It's kind of a big event. I know. I get it. I know why it didn't make the list, but still.
Do I need to draw a diagram for you?
It's the same argument for Blazing Saddles.
Can you name... No, it's a totally different argument for Blazing Saddles. Once a spoof, this was a contemporary movie at the time. What's the full name of the movie? Come on. You got
to
give the full
name. Dr. Strangelove or How I Learned to Love...
No.
How I Learned
to... Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
See, there you go. Yes. And by bomb, they mean the nuclear bomb. They're not talking about Eddie Murphy's latest movie.
Probably the greatest ending to a movie ever.
Yes. Don't say it, because some people...
I'm not going to. I mean, because I know there's plenty of people out there, especially the younger people in our generation, who might be listening to us. go see this movie.
What other movie can you shoot a Coke machine and have Slim Pickens and Darth Vader in an air bomber together?
Exactly.
So there you go.
James Earl Jones, I believe that was his first movie.
No. No, was it?
Yeah, it was. Wasn't somebody telling me that?
Well, just because somebody told you that doesn't mean it's true. You know.
I'm going to look it up while you do your thing.
My baby's diapers are made of gold, and I told you that. It must be true.
What are your picks?
Okay, let's move on. My picks are, and I'm going to call this the Friday the 13th grab bag, because there's a whole ton of Friday the 13th stuff coming out this week. You've got the killer cut of the new remake that they did, and it's in DVD and Blu-ray. It's bloodier, it's gorier, still has plenty of breasts in it. That's awesome. And it is available. Not a whole lot of special features. Did you get the Blu-ray?
Of what?
Of Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th, the killer cut? Yeah, I did.
Was there...
Not a ton of special features.
Yeah, the DVD only has like deleted scenes and a making of a behind-the-scenes documentary.
But if you have the Blu-ray of Friday the 13th and you have BD Live, you can go on, you can download the trailer for Trick or Treat. Doherty's Trick or Treat, and that's very cool. Like a very cool trailer.
The DVD. It's actually on the DVD, so you don't even have to worry about a download.
That's
stupid. It plays the second you put
the DVD. I hate people with DVDs now.
Wow. And then on DVD, continuing on DVD, you have... Well, on Blu-ray, they've released Friday the 13th Part 2 and 3D the Part 3 in 3D on Blu-ray. They did deluxe editions of these like 4 or 5 months ago when the remake came out. Now they're hitting Blu-ray. And of course, the 3D is still that red-blue stuff, but it looks better on an HD TV than it does on just a tube TV.
Right.
But it's still, you get the double vision. And those also have... those
double vision.
Well, it has all the special features from the deluxe editions as well. But they've also re-released parts 4, 5, and 6 on deluxe edition DVD. And they actually have some decent special features. They've got some behind-the-scenes stuff, and they've got... these short Lost Tales of Camp Blood, which are these new sort of short slasher films people make, and they do a mockumentary of, you know, sort of like talking about Jason, although it's not really well executed. It's still kind of cool. So there's all those Friday the 13th things. The other ones I want to mention, there's also two TV seasons that are out that are family oriented. Might as well throw that in since I was going on and on about you know, Friday the 13th and breasts and all that. Everwood and The Secret Life of the American Teenager, both of those, season two of each of those is out in a box set. So if you want to, you know, if you don't want to skip...
Can I mention a few other ones?
Sure.
Now?
Well, okay. Do you want me to finish mine?
Finish yours, and then I have a few more that I want to mention I just thought of.
Okay. The other one I want to talk about is Nature's Most Amazing Events. Now, this is a BBC Nature series. It's out on DVD. It came out on DVD a couple weeks ago, but it's out on Blu-ray. And it's a fantastic Blu-ray, just because nature shows are going to make... fantastic Blu-rays, because they shoot them in high...
Nature looks great in high definition.
And
it also looks great if you go outside.
Yeah, well, you can't exactly go outside and see narwhals and polar bears, hopefully.
Where you live.
They'd eat you.
Maybe in Ohio.
Okay, well, yeah, and I'm pretty sure the narwhal population of Austin is pretty small.
But it's there, don't worry.
But the other thing that's kind of cool about the DVD, the Blu-ray, is it has a whole... It has a step-by-step guide on how to optimize your Blu-ray player in brightness and contrast and all that stuff, which you don't see all that often, so that's kind of an extra bonus. Okay, go on with the other ones you have.
Well, I just have Burn Notice Season 2. Big fan of Burn Notice.
You know what? I didn't put that on the list because I figured you were going to take it.
Also, Spaceballs on Blu-ray is awesome.
Yeah.
So, and then Lost Seasons 1 and 2 are out on Blu-ray, so you should pick those up.
Yes.
And John Adams. I mean, that was a good week.
Burn Notice is also on DVD. It just came out, and Season 3 started. So, yeah, check it out. It's a great show.
Can I make my own stinker, and then you can give me the other stinker?
Sure.
Ghostbusters on Blu-ray.
Oh,
awful.
Not a good Not a good transfer or not a good special?
Terrible features? Transfer. Really? Terrible transfer.
Does it look like a VHS?
Worse.
Well, but see, it was made in the 80s. Some of those 80s transfers don't look good just because the stock's bad.
Yeah. All right. What's the other stinker? We got to get through this. We got to move.
The Cell 2, because it was a really cool movie with J-Lo, and then they just didn't have much of a budget and kind of was terrible. It doesn't make much sense.
Yeah,
we got to wrap up.
Wrap up. Review time. The Proposal, Kevin said, kind of rocks.
Kinda
in
rocks.
Year one, we agreed. Totally sucks.
Boop.
Next week, Transformers.
That's right.
Ooh, and My Sister's Keeper. In the meantime, head over to fatguysthemovies.com. Until then, hasta la vista, baby.
was that an Arnold accent, or were you just trying to be sexy?